Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Well, let me start with a happy holiday to you. Happy New Year, actually. Tomorrow's the evening. I hope each and every one of you is out there having a good time with someone you love. Best way to spend a holiday like New Year's Eve. And don't drink and drive. That's the best I can do for you. Don't drink and drive. Enjoy New Year's Eve, however, and good luck to all of you in the coming year. I want to start this evening with an issue that is very sensitive and one which I feel strongly about. It is something, my conclusions here you may not agree with, and I suspect that I'm going to receive a lot of comments tonight and tomorrow. A lot of emails telling me that I don't know what the hell I'm talking about and something of that sort. But I want to talk about the police problem in New York City. Mayor de Blasio, the PBA, the police, and all that. First we have the mayor, de Blasio, and then we have the president of the PBA, Lynch is his name, and New York police in general, all 35,000 of them. I think the police are out of control. They forget that the mayor is number one in the city of New York. He's numero uno. He's entitled to respect as the mayor of New York City. And each side here, the PBA and the mayor, have freedom of speech. But the PBA president, he goes too far. He's a radical, this guy. He's out there bellowing. He's tougher with what he's saying than our presidential candidates are when they run against each other, and sometimes they say some pretty nasty things. It doesn't make sense. It's not good judgment the way he's talking. Turning their backs on also, besides the president of the union going off half-cocked, policemen turning their backs on the mayor on more than one occasion. This is not right. There is a degree of respect that is owed by the underlings, and the police are to their superior, the mayor. Let me tell you something, too. I know a little bit about policemen. Early on in my professional career, for 3 years, I was counsel to the Police Conference of New York, Inc. It was the statewide PBA, and one of our members that I worked for and represented was the New York City PBA. Johnny Cassess was president at the time, a tougher man I never knew. He would never talk like this. He was tough, but he would never talk as Lynch is. And I just think he's a politician gone astray here. We have to recognize, and here's where people may step away from me tonight on this issue. This police problem we have is not new. It's been around for 10 to 15 years. The attitude, the mental attitude of police officers have changed since 9/11. Why? Because they were told right after 9/11, you are our first line of defense. If terrorism attacks, if it comes to the United States, the local police department will be the first that have to deal with it. And this must have given, I believe, police officers a different perspective on their job, a different approach to it. We got to be tougher. Our responsibility is heavier. Then came the militarization of the police, something I think is absolutely terrible. Our government giving, loaning, selling all this military equipment, a third of it's brand new, by the way, all this military equipment to local police departments. Now, if you give it to them, they're going to use it. Now, the government says, we're only giving it to them in case, you know, there's an attack. They will be ready. But the police officers have it. And on top of this 9/11 mentality that developed, they started using this military equipment. I don't have to tell you the stories. You're all aware of them. You know, like using one of those big tank things to deliver a summons in a domestic relations dispute. This went to their heads. That's what I'm trying to say. It went to the heads of the police officers. And now I come to this point. It worries me that a certain portion of our public, And I think on this police issue, we are evenly divided as we are in politics, Democrats as opposed to Republicans, 50-50, that part of the public that is blind is the word I use, that have blind faith in what the police officers are doing, that believe that police officers always do right, and they have basically blind faith in authority, they walk around with rose-colored glasses. They think the police can do no wrong. They think the system is working today. And I will tell you, at least I think so, the system is not working. Several months ago, I read a major article from the local newspaper here. My newspaper column was on the disintegration of our legal system. And this is the way it is. It's been falling apart. The grand jury isn't working. I've heard too many people say, well, the grand jury didn't indict the police officer, so they're probably right. The grand jury system is being used and abused by the prosecutors. And there are laws that have been passed in many states now that make a police officer in a shooting, puts him in a position where it's quite easy for him to get off. All he has to say, I was in fear for my life. Who's going to question him? You know, that's the way it goes. So this blind faith in authority is not correct. People have to step back and look at it from both sides. All right? I'm not trying to convince. I'm saying think. Don't accept everything on blind faith. The other issue I want to talk about, and I'm old enough to say this. I'm 79 years old, and I've seen a lot happen. Today, the problem is police versus blacks. Police versus blacks. There has to be something wrong with police versus blacks if so many blacks are being killed. It's not a new thing. It's been developing. There has to be something wrong. You don't have to be smart or stupid. You don't have to be an intellectual to understand. Too many blacks are being killed. There has to be something wrong. And in addition, a number of whites are being killed. What I'm saying is today, it's the police versus the blacks, those two groups. Tomorrow, though, it's going to be the police versus the blacks and the whites. Because if the police are not reined in on how they handle suspects, primarily black today, tomorrow they're going to exercise that same power and authority on the white community. And then it's going to be the police against the blacks and the whites. You have to remember, don't say this won't happen. This is power gone astray. It's going to happen. It will happen. It can happen. It will happen. We're going to go from police versus blacks to police versus blacks and whites, because the police are going to abuse the white population in the same fashion as they are abusing the black population. And that's the story that's going to bring in a lot of adverse comment tomorrow. With those who don't agree with me, there's two sides to this story, and I feel strongly about the position I have taken. Now I want to stay with the New York City Police Department on another issue. A study came out this week, a study done by the Comptroller of the City of New York. Big job, New York City Comptroller. And the report basically said that a new lawsuit is filed every 2.5 hours in New York City against the police department. Every 2.5 hours, 365 days a year in New York City, a new lawsuit is filed. 2013 was the year they used. There were 3,800 new lawsuits, 3,800 new lawsuits. The report is called ClaimStat. It's the parts of it that I read are very compelling, and it illustrates the dire need for reform. You can't have all these lawsuits. These lawsuits, by the way, are based on police misconduct, abuse, civil rights violations, and automobile accidents while police officers are operating motor vehicles. This is a serious problem. The 2015 budget, and this is an example of why it's a serious problem, the 2015 budget sets forth $674 million, I repeat, $674 million for settlements and judgments of these lawsuits. That's a lot of money, $674 million. This is taxpayer money also in the city of New York, and the people there should be concerned about it. And that figure, to pay off lawsuits against the police department, and with for that kind of money, my friends, these aren't phony lawsuits. New York City has the Corporation Counsel's Office is one of the finest in the country. An attorney worked for me for about 15 years who came from, he was the civil rights man in the New York City Corporation Counsel's Office. He came upstate and got on my staff, and he was a terrifically intelligent man, a hard fighter, and he saw things the right way. He had common sense, good judgment. Well, the $674 million is more than the combined amount set forth in the budget for the Parking Department, Department of Aging, and the New York Public Library combined. Right now, we're going on to Greece. We're going to leave New York City. That's enough. I've said enough about that for the time being. Greece. I love Greece. You know this. I've spoken about it many times. I've had the good fortune to travel Greece extensively on more than one occasion. I know Athens. I've spread myself all over the Greek Isles, from Santorini to Mykonos to Armagos. I met all kinds of people while I was there, and I spent two and three months each time. I spoke to the cab drivers, the merchants, the people on the street, restaurant owners, waiters. I chatted with everybody because starting 3 years ago, this problem was big in Greece. The Greeks were suffering big time, because of the euro wasn't working for them. The euro nation wasn't working. They are in debt, were then and are now in debt more than any other European country to the euro union and Germany. And 3 years ago, I predicted in writing in a column that appeared in Amazon Kindle as well as in the newspaper. And I also wrote about this in the book I published this past year, The World Upside Down. I predicted, and I'm not saying this because I predicted it, but I predicted the following, that World War III would not start in the Middle East if there was going to be one. It would start in Greece, and it would start over the euro and Germany pushing too hard, the Greek people for repayment, not giving them an easier payment plan, forcing the government of Greece to push an austerity program on the Greek people that was absolutely impossible. So as today, that same government that was in force 3 years ago, still in force today, but not for long, as I shall explain. Today, the youth unemployment, when I say youth, I'm talking about 20 to 30 years old, is 50%. The overall unemployment rate is 26%. Greece's debt is 174% of the gross product, which means if Greece takes all the money it earns in a year, they still and paid for nothing. Don't pay for police, don't pay for army, don't pay for anything. Just pay the euros back to the euro union and Germany. They still come up 74% short. That simple. They're in bad shape over there. Now, the people have lost faith in the president of Greece. And there was recently another vote that he lost. And so by law in Greece, there is a new election called for. He lost a vote of confidence this coming January 25th. This just happened this week. That quick, they're going to have a new election on January 25th. The president and his conservative party are gone. They will not win this election. They won't even come close. Okay, they're going to lose so many seats in parliament. There's no question about it in my mind. It's supposed and it's suggested that the winner is going to be someone from the left, the populist party, and it's considered that the Syriza, S-Y-R-I-Z-A party, the Syriza party is expected to get the most votes. No party will get enough votes to control without getting assistance from one or two other political parties. This is typical coalition government in Europe. So the Syriza party is going to have to look for help from another party or two in the election who had lesser votes, but combining the votes and the seats in parliament, they will have enough to create a new government, a coalition government. And I predicted 3 years ago, and it's going to happen this year, that the Nazi party in Greece, the Nazi party, it's called the New Dawn Party, would come in a strong second. And that's exactly what's going to happen. I'm telling you now, January 25th, the party to the left, Syriza, is going to win. The Nazi party is going to come in a strong second. They're going to combine to form a coalition government with the Syriza party. And the Nazi party, would you believe it? And these guys are Nazis. I've written about it. Go back and read my book, read my columns, my old columns. These people behave like the Nazis, like Hitler's Gestapo in the 1930s. It's happening. It's been happening in Greece the past 3 years. I've reported on it. Nobody seems to talk about it. But it's there. And they're going to win. And the people like them because, you know, they're trying to support the people. They look for jobs. They give food to people who can't feed their families. And all you have to do to get the food for free is join the party. Anyhow, they're going to come in a strong second. The coalition government will result. Now, what's all this going to mean? This new government, this leftist government, where the Nazi party has a strong influence. The first thing is, and they're already saying it, the head of the Syriza party says, we're going to get out of the Euro Union. We're not going to pay them any more money. Screw them. That's exactly what's going to happen. They're not going to pay them any money. Germany's going to go crazy. Germany, in the last 15 years, has made a ton of money off these investments, these loans to other nations in Europe, because the Germans were the most solid country economically. They made wise investments. They loaned all this money to other governments. And unless they get paid back, and that's why Germany has pressed all these governments so horribly, Germany is in trouble economically. If just one country starts paying Germany, Germany's going to be in trouble. They're going to go down the tubes. They're in big-time trouble, and they don't want it. Do you know today, we don't have a middle class. Germany has a terrific middle class, all right? They didn't have one 15 years ago. But through the Euro Union, these loans, pressing everybody to pay them back, they have a middle class. That middle class goes down the tubes. The people aren't going to stand for it. Germany will have to collect. And the only way they can collect is going to be war, perhaps. I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but I suspect strongly it will. And it will begin, as I predicted 3 years ago, between Germany and Greece. Which brings me to an article I read this past week about World War III, and it has to do with Ukraine. A Ukrainian diplomat, a former ambassador to the United States, said this past week that he believes the Ukraine conflict is a prelude to World War III between the United States and Russia. Now, where is he coming from? And I have to admit this. This is above my pay grade. Who's going to start World War III? I think in Greece, it's going to be Greece and Germany, if there is one. This fellow's saying U.S. and Russia, and here's why he's saying it. And I believe this part of it. I believe history repeats itself. History repeats itself. Let's look first at the United States and Japan prior to World War II. Why did Japan bomb Pearl Harbor? Well, Roosevelt did not agree with what the Japanese were doing in Asia. They were taking over Manchuria, Burma, and other countries in Asia. And a stop had to come to it. Just like Russia walked into the Ukraine. The Japs were marching into other countries where they shouldn't have been. And they were too strong and they were taking them over. So what the United States did, they in effect, I don't think the term was in play then, put sanctions against Japan, which prevented Japan from getting oil, which it desperately needed. You have to understand, Japan is just a series of small islands. They import everything. They must import oil, and oil's important all the time. And we stopped the oil from coming into Japan. Japan had no choice, but to start World War II, to bomb Pearl Harbor, in order to relieve themselves of the burden of not being able to get sufficient oil to run their country. Now, and this is fact. I didn't make this up. This is fact. Russia today is buried in sanctions. The sanctions are working. They walked into Crimea. The world got together, and I'm pretty impressed that many of the nations in the world are supporting the sanctions. And they are economic sanctions, which is making Russia suffer. Right now, Russia is in a major recession. The value of the ruble, that's their dollar, is down considerably. And oil prices are down. Appreciate that 75% of Russia's gross national product comes from the sale of oil to other countries. Got it? 75% of Russia's income is derived from selling oil to foreign countries. Now, with the sanctions in place and the way the United States has played this game, we have forced the price of oil down dramatically. You all know it. So Russia cannot sustain itself on these cheap prices. They're going crazy. Russia had a strong middle class. The middle class there is suffering. Russia loves Putin. The Russian people love Putin. What he's done for them in the last 15 years, no one did since Stalin did just before World War II. In a different way, but Stalin brought the country up and ahead. Putin's done it terrifically economically, okay? And something bad's going to happen because now your middle class is breaking apart. He has a recession. He's going to have major unemployment, and his biggest product, oil, he can't sell to make a profit anymore. So the sanctions that choked Japan are choking Russia today, and if Japan gave us Pearl Harbor, this diplomat is saying Russia could start, and they've got nuclear weapons as we do, a nuclear war over the issue of the sanctions, which really started with Crimea. Now, I don't know if it's going to happen. They say it. I worry about it. I do know, okay, that there seems to be it isn't inevitable. I was going to slur on the word. I'm sorry. It's not inevitable, but it's sort of there, and you have to worry about it, and this is why you have to worry about it. You put a person in the corner, or you put a rat in the corner. That person, that rat, has no choice but to charge out and claw and bite and fight to get out of that corner. We have placed Russia successfully in a corner. And the only way it can get out is it's got to get back to being a big economic country. The oil's got to sell. And it may very well be it's going to require war for them to come out. Putin is not going to permit his people to suffer very long. Putin is not going to permit his image to be downtrodden. It's food for thought, my friends. Now, we go to my dear president. That's something that people are going to argue with me about, by the way. Greece, war, perhaps war, Ukraine. And what I'm going to talk about now, not everyone's going to agree with me on, but I just think this is the way things seem to be going in this world. I want to talk about President Obama, my president and yours. I voted for him in two elections. I supported him. But as I've been saying the last several months, I think he's screwing up in his last term here as president, all right? And probably screwed up a little bit in his first 4 years. He announced this week, President Obama, we got out of Afghanistan finally. He announced that the United States was safer and more secure because the 13-year-old Afghanistan war was over. the longest war in U.S. history. We were more secure and safer because of that. I disagree. Because what did we accomplish? What did the United States accomplish by going into Afghanistan and fighting over there for 13 years, all right? We lost more than 2,000 American lives. 2,000 American lives. Obama says al-Qaeda's leadership has been devastated, destroyed because of the Afghan war. Well, of course, their leadership, they're still around, al-Qaeda, but their leadership is devastated. We'll all agree on that. We beat the hell out of them. However, it's been replaced by ISIS. I mean, we got rid of one dictator group, in effect, and we got a new one that's even worse. Slices people's heads off, hangs people on crosses, crucifies them. Look, I don't have to tell you what they're doing. It was replaced by ISIS and the Taliban. Sure, their leadership is gone, but they're still there, and these guys are now signing up to fight for ISIS. And the other thing is, it took us basically 11 years since 9/11 to win this war. It's 13 years, but it's, in reality, it's 11 years. In any event, he says the United States is more secure. Are we any more secure today than we were 5 years ago or 10 years ago with regard to Middle East problems? We've been in Iraq. We've been in Afghanistan. We've got Iran on our backs. We've got Syria on our backs. Who the hell knows what's going to happen in the Middle East? It's a bomb waiting to go off over there also. And I don't think we're any more secure today by fighting this war, having so many Americans' lives lost, and spending all that money. And I say, I know I'm off on a kick tonight, but these things really concern me here at Year's End. I say that a year from now, we will be in a worse mess in Afghanistan than we are today when we are leaving. In other words, things aren't going to be good there. They're not going to get better. They're still bad. They're shooting each other over there yet. They were shooting at our soldiers as we take them out. It's going to be worse a year from now than it is today. It's going to be worse after 13 years. Nothing has really been accomplished in Afghanistan. I do give Obama credit for the number of troops he has brought down. At the beginning of his first term, between Iraq and Afghanistan, we had 180,000 American soldiers in Iraq and in Afghanistan. He's brought that number down to today to 15,000. And we're going to leave them there, apparently, in order to train the Afghan soldiers and so forth. I think these people are useless when we train them. Look what happened to the Iraqis. We let them form their own government. They were supposed to take on ISIS when it came through. They put their weapons down and ran the other way, the soldiers we had trained. All right? It's not going to work, in my opinion. I hope it does. And I think we've wasted 13 years in Afghanistan. Not Obama's fault. We were in there already with Bush. We wasted our time in Iraq. Again, not Obama's fault. We were in there, but he should have gotten us out earlier. That's my show for this last Tuesday night in 2014. I hope you have enjoyed. I hope I have not offended too many of you. I don't talk like this to offend. I express my true feelings, and I'm trying to create something where people will think a little more about these issues, because they're vital and important to us, no question about it. Okay, friends, you enjoy this holiday. Enjoy New Year's. If you're you like this show, buy my book. I say it again, The World Upside Down. You'll love it. You can get it on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. If you don't like the show, don't buy the book. You will not enjoy it. Again, Happy New Year, and good night.